So there are two real sources. So if we'd been talking 20 years ago, we'd have said there's one origin of meteor showers, and that's comets. Comets are these dirty snowballs that fly around in space and spend most of their time way away from the sun with nothing much going on. They can be a few hundred meters across, a few kilometers across. But when they get nudged onto orbits that bring them close to the sun, they get hot. And when you heat ice up in space, it sublimes, it boils off into space, and that carries with it the dust that's part of the dirty snowball. And that dust goes on to spread out around the orbit of the comet, and when the Earth runs into it, the dust burns up in the Earth's atmosphere, and we get a meteor shower. The one thing that's changed in that picture in about the last 20 years or so is that one of the best meteor showers of the year, the Geminids, didn't really fit the picture. And when people have looked into it in more detail, they've found that its parent object's actually an asteroid, something more rocky and metallic without the surface ices. And the reason that produces dust is it gets so close to the sun, it actually gets heated so much it cracks and fractures and sheds material. Similar kind of thing, but it's a rocky object rather than an icy, dusty object.
Now, if we're trying to rate meteor showers, what might actually make one meteor shower better than another? Is it just how much stuff we're running into?
It's a combination, actually. So the number of meteors you see is a combination of how much material is hitting the Earth's atmosphere and how quickly it's traveling when it hits. It's this kind of sweet spot you're looking at. The faster something hits the Earth's atmosphere, the more energy it carries. And this goes back to the kind of physics of kinetic energy. So when you were at school, you may have come across this equation that said kinetic energy is equal to half of the mass of an object times its velocity squared. And what that means is if you double the speed of something, you quadruple the energy it carries. So the quicker objects carry lots more energy than the slower ones. And it's the energy that they're carrying that we see when they burn up in the night sky.
Right.
So a grain of dust traveling at 70 kilometers a second will burn far, far brighter than one traveling at 12 kilometers a second. Much faster, so much more energy.
And now, just before we launch into what meteor showers we might be able to see this year, why do we actually see different meteor showers from year to year?
So every year as the Earth goes around the sun, it follows essentially the same route. And all of the comets, all of the asteroids that birth these meteor showers also follow their own orbits around the sun. Not quite as regular as clockwork. We have this idea that it's just regular as clockwork, everything going with perfectly the same orbit, but they're continually nudged around by the planets. The gravity of the Earth, the gravity of Jupiter throw these things onto new orbits, tweak them, move them around. As they move on one given orbit before they're thrown away from it, they're gradually laying down layers and layers of dust that spread out and fill the orbit. So you can imagine the Earth going around in its nearly circular orbit, it's continually crossing these dust streams left behind by the comets. And they're in about the same place every year, give or take, given the perturbations from the planet. So every time we pass through them, we'll get a given meteor shower. So, for example, the Geminids, the shower produced by the asteroid I talked about, occur every December because that's the time of year we run through the dust stream. But the rates change slightly over time. The showers move around slightly over time because of the nudging of the planets pulling everything around. The solar system's a very mobile, very fluid place.
Right. And so then I guess with that, what are we going to be seeing this year?
So every year we've got the regular meteor showers, the ones that happen at the same time every year, but in each given year, different ones are highlighted because you're looking for faint flashes of light in the night sky. The bigger the grain of dust or the faster it's traveling, the brighter the flash will be. But obviously you want dark skies to see as many of the flashes of light, as many of the meteors as possible. So the full moon is a real problem because when the moon's in the sky, it brightens the background of the sky and you can't see the fainter stars. And if you can't see the fainter stars, you can't see the fainter meteors either. And so the rate you observe falls. We've still got the same amount of dust hitting the atmosphere, but you've got a higher threshold before you can actually observe it as a visible meteor. So this year, unfortunately, the Geminids, which I talk about a lot, my favorite shower in December, are pretty much wiped out by the full moon, which is happening at the same time. You'd still be getting 100 meteors per hour, but the moon will wash out all but the very few brightest, so you might only see 5 or 10, which is a real shame. But as the moon is different phases every year for each shower, different showers get highlighted.
Right. So what's the best one to look forward to this year?
The one I'd look forward to most of all this year are the Eta Aquarians. Now, they're a shower that's actually very unusual for a meteor shower. It's better observed from the southern hemisphere than the north. Thanks to a quirk of geometry, the northern hemisphere usually gets the best of meteor showers. Just the bad luck of our generation. In 200 years' time, it might have changed, but at the minute, that's where most of the dust is hitting the Earth. But the Eta Aquarians are a bit of an exception. The reason they're not as well known as things like the Geminids and the Perseids is partially just because they're a southern hemisphere shower. We've got few people in the southern hemisphere observing and recording things to tell people about what's going on. But the other thing is that they're an early morning shower rather than an evening shower. You actually need to be up before dawn to witness them. The point in the sky they come from doesn't actually rise until 1 or 2 a.m., and so you can't see anything at all until then, and then the rates begin to climb through the night. Eetraquerids are active from late April through to the end of May, but they're at the best at the end of the first week of April. So you're first week of May. So you're talking about May 6th, May 7th. For about a week around there, early in the morning before sunrise, you'll be treated to some very fast-flying, hopefully very bright and spectacular shooting stars in the morning sky before sunrise. And they're related to Comet Halley, the most famous of comets, which goes around the sun every 76 years or so. It's at this time of year, and also in October, we plow through the debris that comet's left behind, and we get these meteor showers.
So with a little bit of dedication, you'll be treated to a pretty good sight.
Yep. So if you go out camping, something like that, get a little bit out of town so that the sky's even darker, go to bed early and get up in the early hours before dawn, watch sunrise, something like that, and in the couple of hours before dawn, you should hopefully see some spectacular ones. And one of the nice things about meteor showers, just as the radiant point, the place they're coming from, rises, is that you can get these things called earth-grazing meteors. Now, normally having the place the meteors are coming from in the sky low on the horizon isn't a good thing because you get fewer meteors then than when it's high in the sky. But when it's right down very low to the horizon, the grains of dust are just skimming the atmosphere, coming in at a very shallow angle, which means you can get these earth-grazers that can span the entire sky, appear far out in the east, go all the way overhead and vanish off to the west. Because they're coming in at such shallow angle, they can travel a huge distance. It can be really spectacular. So just after the radiant rises, you get fewer meteors, but the ones you see can be really spectacular.
Now, Dante, in addition, just to putting meteor showers aside for a little bit, we had a lot of really interesting astronomical events and observations from last year. What's one other astronomical event you're looking forward to this year?
There's all sorts. I mean, I actually always like to hedge my bets and say the thing that will be most exciting this year is probably the thing we don't know is going to happen yet. So the meteor showers that I've talked about happen every year, but we do occasionally get a surprise when on one night of the year, for no apparent reason, you get an outburst of meteors. That can happen any night of the year and is quite spectacular. Similarly, we can get comets that are not expected. So the comets whizzing around the sun, some of them go around on very short periods and we've seen them all before, but there are comets like Comet McNaught, which was incredibly spectacular about a decade ago now. That was visible at the end of 2006, early 2007. So if we'd been having this interview in 2006, January, and you'd said, what's coming up this year that'll be spectacular, I'd have known nothing about it. It hadn't been discovered yet. But later that year, it was spectacular, probably the best comet for 30 years.
Right.
Now, these things are totally random, totally unpredictable, but I always keep my fingers crossed that we're going to get one because I'd love to see another great comet. We've also got some fabulous space missions out there doing some really cool work. And one that's going to be interesting this year is Juno, which is on its way to Jupiter. It's going to do some really cool science there. So you'll be hearing more about that over the next few months.